Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. We're going to have a fascinating program today. We're going to get to it in just a minute. But first off, I begin, as I always do, asking you, our listeners, to consider contacting us, letting us know if there's a particular topic, some area of interest that you would like us to cover. We'll do our best to fulfill your wishes, but we have to know your wishes. So I'm going to ask you to please feel free to contact us two different methods. First, good old mail. Put a stamp on a letter, address it to Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. That's Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. The zip code in Greenwich is 06836. That's 06836. If you're on the computer, would rather email us, that's easy to do. Please email us at clemens10@aol.com. Let me spell Clemens for you. That's CLEMONS, the number 10, at AOL.com. While you're on the computer, I encourage you to go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today, and you can find that at spirituality.org. That's spirituality.org. And the org is very important to get to the right website. While you're there, there are many features, articles, but also Thoughts for the Week, the radio program. You could listen to it at your leisure at our website. Well, first I have to announce that my co-host, Dorothy Riera, is busy taking care of some family business today, so I'm on my own as the interviewer, but we are delighted that our guest, and I am delighted our guest is here, Deacon George Sartor. Deacon George Sartor is a deacon of the Archdiocese of Hartford, Connecticut, and we'd like to talk about a deacon's life. Well, I don't know, I just met George recently, so we're going to go right to it and find out about George and about what brought him to the diaconate and what he's doing. Well, first off, welcome, George.
Thank you, Father, very much. Good to be here.
Delighted to have you here. Now, what inspired, well, first off, maybe a little bit of background, what your normal or work life has been, and then what kind of inspired your decision to pursue the diaconate?
Well, I'm married. I've been married for this year. In fact, next week will be 36 years.
Congratulations.
My wife Monica and I doing very well. We have two children, our daughter Colleen and our son Ryan, who's living in New York City. And Colleen lives right in Milford, where we're from. And actually, I'm assigned to the parish, to her parish.
Oh,
it was kind of just by chance. And so I get to see our two grandsons, Derek and Bryce.
They get to see you too.
They get to see me too, yeah.
In action.
And our son-in-law, Chris, of course. So they come and they help me out in church. They help me with get my alb on and my stole, and we go through the paces. But for the past 20 years, I've been working for a manufacturer in Shelton, and I'm an environmental safety and health coordinator for them. So I take care of all the OSHA stuff and the regulatory stuff. But how I got into the diaconate, it was probably 15, 16 years ago when I thought about it. I was ordained in 2008, but it's a five-year study program. But I was thinking about it, and I had a good friend who was a deacon, our parish deacon. And I just one day I said to my wife, I think I might want to be a deacon because it looks kind of cool. And I had no idea what it entailed.
Well, what was your wife's reaction to that?
Her reaction was, did you hear the call?
Hmm.
And I go, what are you talking about? What call, you know? Because, you know, we're supposed to, right, Father? We're supposed
to
hear this call, right?
Yeah.
I didn't hear a call. I had a feeling that it was a good thing to do, that was where I was supposed to be, because I've always wanted to serve.
Mm.
And that's what diaconate means, diakonos from the Greek word to serve, a servant. And that's where I thought I was being pulled in that direction, but I didn't hear anything. There was no voices in my head or anything like that.
But something emerges from within you. You call it a feeling.
Yes.
That you felt drawn to pursue this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. Now, I believe you said you were ordained in 2005?
Eight.
2008. Yeah. Okay. To our listeners, ordination may have, especially if they don't quite understand the diaconate as well, what being ordained means you are a member of the clergy.
Correct.
Maybe you can share a little bit of a distinction between, let's say, what your ordination means versus the priesthood.
Well, if you go back to the history of the diaconate, I mean, first, of course, we had the apostles, the original bishops. And in the Acts of the Apostles, it's pretty clear, the Acts of the Apostles, at some point, they had to, we shouldn't have to wait on tables, right, Father? Mm-hmm. And so they decided to get some helpers, who they call deacons or servants, to help do the daily administrative things so that the apostles, the bishops, could actually do the more spiritual and pastoral work. Mm-hmm. And so, as it says in the Acts of the Apostles, they chose seven men from Jerusalem. One of them, of course, probably the most famous, being St. Stephen, the deacon. So that's where it was first. So you had the bishops, the apostles or bishops, and then you had the deacons helping them. And then as time went on, and that was an ordination, they laid the laying on of hands, just as Jesus laid his hands on the apostles. Mm-hmm. The apostles went and conferred this office, you might say, to those first seven men in Jerusalem. So ordination, we are ordained by the bishop, and we are working at the pleasure, you might say, of the bishop. Mm-hmm. But most of us, today's diaconate is really, for the most part, attached to a parish. Mm-hmm. And we normally work with the pastor, with a priest or pastor or administrator. So the ordination is, we are one of the three ordained ministries, bishop, priest, deacon. As it turns out, as things evolved over the many hundreds or thousands of years, now we have three distinct offices, whereas in the beginning, you had the two, really. You had bishop and deacon. And over time, the priesthood came in because the bishops, the parishes, you might say, grew and grew and grew. Mm-hmm. And then the bishops couldn't be everywhere. The apostles or whoever they ordained to take their place couldn't be everywhere, and the churches grew. So they needed other people who were ordained to do the priestly, to work the priestly office. The deacons were not really ordained for that. They were ordained to maybe to bring communion, to bring the Eucharist to people who, far away, that the bishop would confer. But then there was a priesthood, and then over many years, probably around the 3rd or 5th century, the permanent diaconate kind of went away, and then it really, I'd say 1,000 years or so ago, there was really no need or no perceived need for the permanent diaconate. It was more of a
transitional state, deacon, right? Yes. As I was a deacon the year before I was ordained
exactly,
a priest.
Exactly, yeah.
But it's really fascinating, and the people, I think, would appreciate knowing how the diaconate emerged from the primitive church and how it really was that other arm, of what was happening and helping the bishop. Mm-hmm. When did things start to happen where the church started looking again at the notion of permanent diaconate?
It was first raised really during World War II at the Nazi concentration camps. There was a group of men there that kind of kicked around the idea. These were prisoners. Mm-hmm. Kind of kicked around the idea that we needed someone, some kind of bridge between the priesthood and the laity. And they talked about it amongst themselves. And then about 1957, I believe, Pope Pius thought about it. He's thinking about, okay, it was presented to him. He said, but the church is not ready for it yet. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Vatican II came around. And in the document Lumen Gentium, it actually gives a kind of an outline of what the permanent diaconate, the reemergence of the permanent diaconate, what it would kind of look like. And then Pope Paul VI, as he finished up the Second Vatican Council, and then sometime after that, I think around maybe 1967 or so, in the late 60s, he actually, I believe, put together a commission to study it and put together some norms of what a deacon should be and how they can work in the ministry in the church. And then by the early 70s or so, it came out that there would be a framework to ordain men to take on the permanent diaconate as the transitional diaconate still continued to be. So now you have really, there's only one diaconate.
Mm-hmm.
And it, as you said, Father, you were a deacon before you were a priest. And you're still a deacon, I would say, with that other ordination of the priesthood. Mm-hmm. And then in the 70s, I think around 75, mid-70s or so, the diaconate was built up in the United States. And right now, at this point, the estimate is about 36,000 or so permanent deacons in the world. And roughly half of them are in the United States. Mm. It hasn't really taken root in many other countries. But in the United, especially in Africa, it hasn't really taken root.
I find that interesting because you would think the need would be particularly acute in places like that where, of course, I admit, I'm really not all that sure of the vocation situation in some of these countries. But wherever the church is, and especially thriving, like Africa, you would really think, it's kind of a side question, but did you have any idea? Do you think it's simply the bishops aren't pushing it, or the people just don't react it?
Well, here in the United States, I don't know any other place, but I don't know the Northeast here in New England. We're blessed with having many African priests. You've probably met them in different dioceses and helping out, and they'll come here for school. Mm-hmm. They'll come here for their college education and their formation, and then but they are then drawn back to their home country. So I've served with many priests from Africa, and I asked them about it, of course. It's one of my interests is, what's the diaconate like? And they said it's really almost non-existent because it's an early church.
Yeah.
It's fairly new, and they're focusing on the priesthood, I think, more than anything else, trying to attract men into the priesthood. And once that is, because it's probably the fastest growing church in the world is the African church. And as that grows, eventually, I would hope, like you're saying, there's a need there. So maybe then you might have some married men or some older men with families who will be interested in serving in that way. So that's what I've learned from the African priests that I've served with.
Are you in contact with many deacons outside of the archdiocese
Not in the country, a couple. There's a deacon close friend of my family's in New York, in the Archdiocese of New York. And we all do things a little different. I know a gentleman who's in the formation program in Bridgeport Diocese right now. He helps us out actually at St. Anne's Church in Milford, where I serve. One of the churches where I serve, St. Anne's and St. Gabriel's in Milford, and he helps with the music. And he's got quite a rigorous formation program you have in Bridgeport. It's more than what I went through eight to 12 years ago.
So some of the guys think it's a bit of a pain.
They have to go down the Yonkers for the seminar. It's quite rigorous, but it's a good thing because then you're going to be forming men who are prepared, even better prepared than I was, I think. Yeah.
The reason I asked that question about, especially in case you have known anything about situation throughout the country, is some of those areas where priests are not as available in many parts of the country, and parishes have some greater distance from each other. I was just wondering if deacons were really almost running parishes. And occasionally the priest would come to do certain sacraments. Yeah.
There's a lot of talk, especially in the Northeast region. We just had a talk from our Archbishop, Archbishop Blair, Leonard Blair. And he just gave a talk to all the parishes, did his video, and we all saw it. It was our homily for this past weekend. And he said, he's talking about evangelization and how it's everyone's responsibility. That's our baptismal responsibility that we've given to evangelize. And he mentioned that the Northeast is probably the hardest hit with people who describe themselves as nuns, right? N-O-N-E-S, right? He said, in fact, the Hartford-New Haven area, which really is the archdiocese of Hartford, is the sixth city, you might say, or region in the nation for the amount of people who are no longer practicing religions. The greatest concentration, you might say, of the nuns, people who just identify themselves when they're asked, they just ask, what religion are you? They just say, none. So we're seeing it in the Northeast. Now, I have a brother near Phoenix, Arizona, and he's got a huge mega church down there. The place is exploding. Texas is exploding right now. And the bishops are learning they need more help. They're probably ordaining more deacons because we're there to help. That's a helper, servant. That's what our vocation is, one of the many things that we do. So that we're there to assist the priests. And so although we are ordained by the bishop and we promise obedience to the bishop, the parish work is the main thing. However, they are encouraging us now to think about being in parish administration. Mm-hmm. So we have had a few deacons in the Archdiocese of Hartford who have been parish administrators. The idea is you would have an administrator taking care of the day-to-day financial office, you know, the physical plant maintenance and just overseeing all that. And then you would have a pastor who would take care of the pastoral, the spiritual needs of the parish. The deacon would as well, to his capacity. But you would have two distinct roles between the pastor and an administrator. Mm. Right now, in most places, you have the pastor is the administrator as well.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned, of course, the parish work, and you have an interesting situation where you help out in two different parishes.
Right. Well, we just had a restructure in Hartford, the diocese. So now we are, before it was two parishes, and now suddenly we are merged into one parish.
Now, I'm familiar with both because I've helped out a little bit at St. Gabriel's. That's right on the water.
Yes, that's our, yes.
And sometimes during storms, the water is right in the
Yes. In fact, the rectory was destroyed at Hurricane Sandy several years ago.
That doesn't surprise me.
So there's no rectory there anymore. It destroyed and... But we do have a beautiful little church there, a little mission-style church, you know.
Yeah.
It's not air-conditioned, so it's a little rough at 11 o'clock Mass on a hot August day. But we get those breezes in from the ocean, and we can hear the water crashing against the seawall there during Mass, which is good.
I'm sorry to disturb you there, because you're talking about the linking of the parish.
Yeah, so what we do is we were linked before.
Mm-hmm.
Our pastor actually passed away 5 weeks after I was assigned to St. Anne's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a tough time, but what they did was, since St. Anne's and St. Gabriel's are so close, they're only a mile apart, they decided to take the parish pastor from St. Gabriel's and give him both parishes. So we were linked. Mm-hmm. The finances, they are separate parishes, but it was one deacon, one priest, one pastor. Now, with the reorganization, the pastoral planning in Hartford, we are now merged, so we are one parish, and we still have the Church of St. Gabriel's, the Church of St. Anne's, but now we are the Parish of St. Raphael.
Really?
Yes, that's our new parish name, St. Raphael. And so there's a whole corporate thing that has to go through that, legal things. We have to have one checkbook and all that other thing, but up until we get to that point, we are still one parish, and we are functioning as one parish, one people, one group.
Now, how do the people... respond, or are they confused about the notion of this combination thing? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you're going to be one parish, and the name changes to St. Raphael's, because a lot of those, they're very dedicated to their
absolutely.
To
I mean,
their church.
The church for many people, their parish is their home, is their second home, and that's their community, that's their family. And when you tell them, and the reasons are legitimate. We, as we've talked about. The priestly vocations, maybe they're there, but they're not being realized.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have what we might call a priest shortage if we maintain all of the buildings that we have.
Mm-hmm.
As Archbishop Blair has said, we have enough priests for the number of Catholics. We don't have enough priests for all those many, many masses and buildings we have to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
So to get the people to have to be comfortable with the idea that now you're going to be maybe sitting in church with people that are going to get there before you, and they're going to take the seat that you usually sit in every Sunday, because that's the way we Catholics are a lot. We have our place, right?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
We sit on the end, or we sit in the back, or the corner. That's our spot, and everybody else knows it that you meet every day. Yeah. So that's a little bit of a challenge, but I think we can get past that. The other thing is, as again Archbishop Blair said, when you link two parishes together as one parish and you give it a new name, there's no winners and there's no losers.
Mm-hmm.
We're all one.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been, I think, very, very successful at St. Anne's and St. Gabriel's becoming the parish of St. Raphael.
Mm-hmm.
There have others that aren't so successful.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sort of a parochial, territorial, almost tribal thing that we kind of find ourselves doing, saying this is the way we've always done it and this is the way we want to continue to do it. But for the most part, I think it has been successful because we are part, Father, we're part of one universal church.
Oh, sure.
And when it comes down to it, although, you know, we may have our children who were baptized at that church, we've been married there. We received all our sacraments. We wanted to continue. Things have to change and grow. I think it was St. John Henry Newman who said, if something's not changing or growing, it's dying. Mm-hmm. And we are faced with some serious challenges here in New England.
Mm-hmm. Certainly are. With all the many variety of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
You talked a little bit about those challenges mm-hmm. as far as your work, but how about with you trying to function in both locations, mm-hmm. let's say. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid to say both parishes.
Churches, yeah.
Is it, as far as records and the things you do, mm-hmm. obviously you're involved a lot with the various sacraments,
mm-hmm.
as well as, I presume, education mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. other types of things. Do you run into problems as far as how much time to spend where or how to keep records?
Well, I'm really fortunate. I'm working with another deacon Thomas, Tom Cabine. Did you meet Tom?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Deacon Tom, wonderful. He's been a deacon for about 3 years, and mm-hmm. so he and I work really, really well together.
Oh, that's wonderful.
When he was ordained, he was assigned to both parishes because they were linked at the time. I was originally just assigned to St. Anne's. Since then, I was assigned, so we're both assigned to both. But since I was already kind of ingrained in St. Anne's, he kind of took over the responsibilities, the same ones that I would do, baptisms, baptism preparation, marriage preparation, over at St. Gabriel's. Now we're sharing a lot of duties.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, he did an RCIA program Sunday morning, and then I took care of his baptismal preparation for three couples that were going to have their babies baptized at St. Gabriel's. We've worked together on weddings. He's done educational things for me. We cover each other for baptism, so it's really great to have two. Meeting new people is very interesting, too, in two churches.
But also two deacons who mm-hmm. really are concerned about making sure no one slips through the cracks. I could see this. If you're doing preparation to there and back and forth, and
communication is essential. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have to keep each other apprised of what the other's doing. Yeah.
Now, what has given you, let's say, in the last, you've been deacon, what, seven, eight?
Maybe 9 years, by 9 years.
What's given you most satisfaction in what you do right now? That's a tough question.
It is. It is, because there's a lot. There's a lot of good. There's a lot of challenges, but there's a lot of good. The most pleasurable thing, the thing that I get the most joy from is serving Mass. That's number one,
mm-hmm.
is being next to the priest, serving Mass, serving the people at church, serving Jesus Christ. And that, at the Mass, which is the source of some of our faith. So that's always number one for me.
Yeah, the priest, I remember when the deacons were first coming, I was constantly stepping on their toes. I would literally say, oop, I didn't mean that. That's your foot.
Yeah, sure.
Has all that been worked out?
It still happens sometimes. the deacon is supposed to invite people with the sign of peace.
Yes.
And if a priest isn't used to a deacon, and it's fine. We must always defer to the priest. We're there to help him. So other things that are usually deacon's responsibility. Sometimes the priests do them, but it's okay.
Mm.
It's okay. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
You have enough to. But I'm now you're still working?
Yes, I work a full-time job. Okay. I work 45 hours a week. Sure.
And how has your diaconate affected your job or the people that you work mm-hmm. with?
Well, it seems soon. People knew that I was in formation, and then once I was ordained in 2008, people I work with knew I was a deacon, and that can be a really good thing. People feel like they can come and talk to you about things, and they don't have to be Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
You can be Muslim for all that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that matters, but then it can be a thing where every religion gets ridiculed a little bit. We have to take some of that kind of thing, and you have to have a very thick skin sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But the most enjoyable thing is when people say, or the most frequent thing is, hey, can you pray? Mm-hmm. Can you pray for me?
Mm-hmm.
Can you pray for my mom and so forth? I've been very, very fortunate. My work has been very generous and allowing me to leave work early to do certain things. Like for 5 years in formation, I had to leave work early, an hour or so early, to attend classes. Going away on retreat for a week during my last year of formation. So I've been fortunate. I've had some very good experiences with my work.
it's I could see where it can be really a benefit, the fact that not only those you work with, but even mm-hmm. friends, people you mm-hmm. associate with, whatever it is, mm-hmm. that they may find you more approachable.
I get that a lot. Yeah, we're told that a lot. Mm-hmm. And whether it's real or perceived doesn't matter. That's how people see it. Mm-hmm. And so somebody might come and talk to a deacon about their family life or the mm-hmm. problems they're having with their spouse or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not a counselor by any means, Father, mm-hmm. but we have shared experiences mm-hmm. that we can relate to. And so it does make it a little bit easier for people.
And I would think that fits in well with the new evangelization that mm-hmm. was stressing so much mm-hmm. too.
Mm-hmm.
When we take a look at the relationship, which is so wonderful between you and the other deacon mm-hmm. you're working with, how have deacons, because I want to put you on the spot,
okay,
have deacons
yeah.
done in regard to relating to pastors? Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of, or what kind of stresses will you normally run into?
Well, early in the ministry, I learned two very, very important words, which I use very, very frequently, and they are, yes, Father. I defer to my pastor. I defer to my priest. I'll defer to you, Father, if I ever have the pleasure of serving Mass with you. So we need to learn to work around you. You know, sure, we all look at the rubrics and we all look at, you know, the rules about how to conduct. But ultimately, it's we work around Father. My relationship with the pastors and the ministries that I worked with, I believe, have been very, very good mm-hmm. because there's a tremendous respect there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also we need to support. We need to be kind of a united front sometimes
mm-hmm.
because being a pastor, as you know, Father, is not an easy thing.
No.
And if a pastor can look to a deacon as not only his confidant but also someone who is going to be there to support him. When things are tough, and the people know that you and the it's almost like a parent. It's like two spouses working together with the children. You know, not letting the children get in between you, kind of a thing. I don't want to demean anyone, but I mean it is seriously like that sometimes. And so we take it very. I take my relationship with my pastor very seriously. It's always a very constructive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, the men that I've worked with, have looked at me as a colleague, not so much as their servant.
Well, very good. Well, we have been speaking with Deacon George Sartor today of the Archdiocese of Hartford, Connecticut, and we'll be speaking more with him in another program. But I want to wish George your best for you, Deacon George, and to our listeners, thank you for being with us today. Please join us again next week. We'll be right back.